Hi, I'm Phil Vavra, and this is Piedmont Arts. The Charlotte Symphony Orchestra is getting ready for its 2025 summer pop season. On this episode, I speak with the CSO's resident conductor, Christopher James Lees, about what we can expect to hear this June at Symphony Park. We also talk about some recent news regarding the beloved outdoor venue near South Park Mall, as well as the latest development in Mr. Lees's career and what life is like for an in-demand conductor. Later, we'll get up to speed on some other fun and interesting events happening across the region with fanfare. A native of Washington, D.C., Christopher James Lees holds bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Michigan. He joined the Charlotte Symphony as assistant conductor in 2016 and was appointed resident conductor in 2018. Since then, he's been a very busy man, conducting around 70 performances each season. Mr. Lees has led the CSO in performances for the Movie and Family series, the Classical series, the Summer Pop series, and has conducted for several special high-profile gala events. In 2023, he was also named music director of the Rock Hill Symphony Orchestra and has worked with orchestras, opera companies, and music festivals across North America, South America, and Europe. And he somehow managed to find room in his schedule to run marathons. The latest news is that the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra offered Christopher James Lees a contract extension through the 2028-29 season. You said yes, right?
Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Give me an idea of what a day or a week in the life of an orchestra conductor is like, because I'm guessing that with all those things I just mentioned about you, time management must be almost, if not just as important as knowing the music.
That's right. I mean, one of the things that I most love about this line of work and this sort of combination of passion and profession is the fact that no 2 weeks are the same. And every week is vibrantly different depending on the project, the venue, the repertoire, the guest artist, the city. In my case, the proximity to the next marathon. There's a lot to juggle in terms of all of those different variables, and it makes it endlessly fascinating. It's never boring. It's always high octane, and you feel like you're just about to fall behind the bus in a number of moments, but it's so fulfilling and rewarding, especially when you see the faces of patrons and the faces of audiences, and they light up, not knowing how that unique moment fits into the broader arc of a week, a month, or a season.
And you have at least one child, am I correct, that you're running around after, too?
That's right. My son, Rowan, is 10 years old, just turned 10 years old. So I've got a fourth grader on an arm some of these weeks as well.
I bet some days that job seems harder than the conducting.
They're strikingly similar in terms of being influential, but not really having any control.
That, right. So how does conducting the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra differ from, say, conducting in Rock Hill or Los Angeles or working overseas? Or does it differ at all? Are there things that you do the same no matter where the stage might be?
It's such a good question. Every city and every orchestra is different. And what I've learned over, you know, this 20-year career I've had so far is that depending on when you drop into a city, the personality of the orchestra is different as well. Whether or not I'm with the New York Philharmonic or LA Philharmonic or here in Charlotte, one of the things I love about being here and for such a long time is that, you know, the CSO musicians and I have been together 9 years so far. This is my ninth season. And in that time, we've built almost a decade's worth of trust in each other, in our ability to move through a program, through a piece of music. They trust me and I trust them. And it makes for a real beautiful musical intimacy that I don't think I'm out of line saying that it becomes audible and palpable for the audience. You know, I had the gift of conducting on the classical series, and we did Debussy's La Mer and Stravinsky's Symphony of Psalms, as well as a world premiere cello concerto. And being able to work on repertoire that requires such detail, such finesse at a speed, which is just lightning quick, to be able to do that with an orchestra that you've built that much cachet with and that you've built that much musical understanding of who needs what when typically, And depending on which player is in which seats, what sorts of things you can ask for, what sorts of things you can believe in their artistic contribution, having those things build up over time is really the greatest gift. In the other cities where I work, both in Rock Hill, South Carolina, where I'm music director, as well as the guest conducting that I do over the country, you get to have sort of a quick date. You have a 1 week experience or a few day experience, and you just put something together, lickety split. And after a performance or two, you're on the road again. And to be in Charlotte this long is a real pleasure and a privilege because even some music director positions won't last 9 years or 12 years or 13 years within your contract extension. So to have that is really, and I have friends in the orchestra and I know their kids, I know their parents. We've been through a lot of times. We went through COVID together. So we really have this sort of esprit de corps that I think the city and the community and the audience benefit from when we work together.
You mentioned building trust. That's kind of where I was going next was when you do the guest conducting or with your most, the most recent addition to your LinkedIn profile with Rock Hill. How long is that honeymoon period?
Well, Rock Hill, I think it's still going. So yeah. I don't know how long. That one will last a while, too, I think. As long as we continue to grow, we continue to build, we continue to add to the ecosystem of artistic experiences in our community. How long is the honeymoon? You know, it's atypical, and I think it's pretty remarkable, you know, for an orchestra of Charlotte size. You know, we're tier two in the League of American Orchestras categorization of symphony orchestras around the country. You know, in this tier, it's pretty typical for a staff conductor to have 3, maybe 5 years together. And then for everyone to say, okay, we know how this goes, let's keep moving, and to bring in some fresh face. And so I think it just speaks to the chemistry that we've been able to have and maintain over this time that we both still want to see where this relationship can go. There's still work to be done. There's still artistic excellence and vitality to pull out and to train and to reinforce on a daily and weekly basis. And as our conductor laureate, Christopher Warren Green, told me once recently, he said, you found a way to be both a leader for the musicians and with the musicians, but also to be a member of the team. And that's really how I see it is I don't make any sound. The musicians make all of the sound. I'm a part of this team and a part of the organization whose mission it is to serve the community. And in my role, I have a chance to do that on a weekly basis in our mobile stage performances, the series that you mentioned, on taps, all of the community performances. And I really value that work. I really value that mission. And so I think as long as the mission is fresh and the repertoire is fresh and they don't get tired of my jokes too much more quickly, the relationship will continue to prosper.
And with this new contract extension, does your role with the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra change at all?
I think it mostly deepens because the variety of things that I do with the orchestra has expanded from my first season. And with the rollout of the mobile stage and more of our community initiatives, with the expansion of the movie series and the way that we're shaping our third coming up on 39 week season, there's a lot to do. And so being able to be working with the artistic operations team, programming in a really vital and interesting and representative way with more concerts to do. I mean, 70 performances this year, that's a high volume for one city.
Now, the CSO Summer Pop Series starts very soon, 4 consecutive Sundays in June, the 8th through the 29th, each with very different themes. And these performances are great for families with kids and perhaps people who are just beginning their journey with orchestral music, aren't they?
Absolutely. When I first arrived in Charlotte and I mentioned to people I conducted the Charlotte Symphony, they said, oh, we love the Summer Parks concerts at Symphony Park at South Park. That's where we always go to hear the orchestra, and it's always a good time, usually because of the Chardonnay they have in their picnic basket on the green, and then the sultry sounds of the CSO coming at them from the stage.
Oh, wine. Is there anything you can't do? Well, let's start with the first performance on the schedule here. Classical's Greatest Hits on Sunday, June 8th.
Yeah, so we're kicking off our season. We try to strike this balance. We call it summer pops, but a lot of our audience, especially in Charlotte, which is unique, have a taste and have a an insatiable appetite for classical music as well. So this is also going to be a special program, not just because we're going to play music that comes from well-known works in the canon of Mozart and Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, but we're also partnering with the Charlotte Symphony Youth Orchestra to do a side-by-side component. And so halfway through the program, the students will arrive on stage, we'll play music from Swan Lake and music of Duke Ellington and popular tunes. And it's guaranteed that even if you didn't know that the name of the piece was The Marriage of Figaro Overture by Mozart, you'll know that you've heard it before, either in a jewelry commercial or in your dentist's office, but never heard with the Charlotte Symphony at South Park. So adding in those elements, we think it's going to be really vibrant, really vital, and especially for kids, seeing kids making music on a stage like that, hearing the sounds coming out, sitting by their professional counterparts. I think that's going to be a really moving evening and a great way to kick off the summer.
Yeah, very different to hear those iconic pieces performed live with the full orchestra. Sometimes when I'm sitting in front of the CSO, I feel like the guy in the old Memorex ads with the hair just blowing back, you know, and you're pushed back in your seat. It's that powerful. Okay. After that performance, we go to Sunday, June 15th, and it's Best of Broadway.
Absolutely. Well, anybody in Charlotte, whether you've been in Charlotte for 1 year or 90 years, you know that the Broadway genre has expanded a lot in our city. And so the scores that come from Les Miserables and Chicago and Wicked and Rodgers and Hammerstein and Lerner and Lowe, all of these great iconic composer and lyricist combinations. It's great to hear outdoors as much as indoors at the Blumenthal. And so to be able to hear the greatest hits from Broadway, and we know we've absorbed a lot of New Yorkers in the last 5 years or so, we're bringing a little bit of that genre to our stage. We're going to invite a young woman named Susie Pepper, who's a recent Carolinian transplant from the Portland, Maine area, to give voice to the one I'm really excited about is Never Enough from The Greatest Showman. By Pasek and Paul, which won so many awards and is opening on Broadway in the next year or so, I believe. And it's just going to be a star-studded event under the stars.
That's based on the movie about P.T. Barnum?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Sunday, June 22nd, we move a little south with Latin sounds.
That's right. Sonidos Latinos. Well, funny story about this one. The CSO programmed this. We planned for this last year. And we were so excited. We had all this great repertoire planned. Dance On Number 2, Tico Tico, the Ginastero Malambo from Estancia, these vibrant Latin rhythms that'll have you shaking in your seats and swaying on the sidewalk around South Park. And two numbers in, a torrential downpour with lightning canceled the rest of the program. And because our schedule is so voluminous, even during the summer months, even during June, we had to, for safety, scramble and conclude the concert. So we're bringing this program back. We're putting it on. We are I can't promise the weather, but we are hoping that we can deliver the full program uninterrupted and even have a bit of Ravel's Bolero as part of this. So we get some classical music, which ties into our classical series next year, as well as fandangos and malambos and danzons. It's going to be a really fun, fun night.
I am planning on that, and perhaps sangria instead of Chardonnay on that Sunday.
That's an excellent recommendation, Phil.
And then you wrap up the Summer Pop series Sunday, June 29th, as close as you could get to Independence Day, with Celebrate America.
This is our annual tradition. We've done this every year for as long as anybody at the CSO can remember. A combination of great patriotic tunes like the American Salute and John Philip Sousa to close, some different marches this year, and integrating other parts of American history. We're going to play by James P. Johnson. This was the stride pianist who made the Charleston famous back in the 20s and 30s. And so we're paying homage to our local roots and showing how North Carolina and South Carolina here at the Carolina border is a critical juncture in terms of representing the American story and even sort of tipping our hat to local history. We've got a wonderful piece called The Appalachian Lament by a local, I guess he lives in Raleigh, composer Terry Musco. And we're playing that because we will be coming up in September on the year's anniversary of Helene, the hurricane that hit the mountain so hard. And so even though we're that far from the disaster and I-40 is now open all the way to Tennessee, like it's still really important for us in the safety and security in Charlotte to keep our neighbors in mind and to keep in mind the folks that are still rebuilding and still trying to dig out from that incredible tragedy. So all of those things come together, some fireworks to conclude the summer, and we're going to call it a Celebrate America program and are fired up for that one too.
You mentioned trouble with the weather last season. I'm curious about adjustments that you and the musicians need to make for outdoor performances. Does the weather, does the humidity affect any of the instruments? And do you have a lighter weight suit that you can wear?
Well, I tell you, my very first performance with the Charlotte Symphony was up in Bailey Park in Cornelius in 2016, right before my contract started here. And I didn't know any better, so I came in full tuxedo, button covers, bow tie, and the orchestra looked at me like, this northerner has no idea what it is to conduct in humidity in North Carolina. And they weren't wrong. So I have a lighter reflective jacket and a polo underneath to stay cool. For the musicians, some of them have outdoor instruments where it won't be as critical if the humidity affects it and gets into the strings or into the wood. The most practical thing, though, really is the sheet music itself, which can be blown off with a gust of improperly timed wind. And so our most valuable asset playing outdoors are paper clips and clothespins to hold the paper onto the stand so that the musicians can play uninterrupted and undisturbed, so the music can really just sing to everybody having that experience.
I assumed it was iPads, but no, I get old school paper clips. I like it.
You know, I think we're at about, if I had to guesstimate, probably 30% of the orchestra will use an iPad. And we're still in that slow transition to the digital age. I like paper. I'm just old enough of a millennial to want to make sure that the battery is charged on my analog materials.
Well, as long as the suit is moisture wicking, you're going to be fine. There's also been some chatter in the local business media about possible changes coming to Symphony Park, perhaps plans for a major renovation to that entire corner of South Park Mall. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, you know, we've performed at Symphony Park for decades, and it has been the summer home of the Charlotte Symphony, and we're obviously in touch as an institution with the developers and with the people that are in charge of that project. And we have a vested interest in continuing the tradition, no matter what happens to the space. So I think like most people, we're watching and waiting, and we're very much, our CEO, David Fisk, is very savvy about how things evolve in our city, and he's at the table for those conversations. And so we're just going to wait and see and respond as necessary. But we're really counting on being able to be there for the next several decades the way that we have been the previous ones.
Christopher James Lees has been the resident conductor for the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra since 2018, and thanks to a new contract extension, will continue to serve in that role through at least the 2028-29 season. You can see him in action during the CSO Summer Pop Series, June 8th through 29th. Tickets are available now at charlottesymphony.org. And keep in mind that their Summer Pops subscription package for all four concerts allows you to reserve a space for your picnic on the lawn at Symphony Park. Mr. Lees, thank you so much for your time and best wishes.
Thank you so much, Phil. It's a pleasure spreading the great message of all the great music coming to Charlotte.
Time to see what's happening with fanfare. And while school's out for summer, or about to be, our curriculum of culture and entertainment is as active as ever. Here's this week's syllabus. Harry, Hermione, and Ron are back on the big screen with the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra. You can relive their second year at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry with Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets in high definition at Belk Theater. Featuring an all-star cast and brilliant special effects, director Chris Columbus's 2002 blockbuster will be accompanied by the live orchestra performing John Williams's unforgettable score. That's June 6th and 7th. Pack up your lawn chairs, picnic baskets, and Chardonnay. As you may have heard, the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra's annual Summer Pop Series gets underway Sunday, June 8th at Symphony Park next to South Park Mall. The 2025 season begins with classical's greatest hits, an evening of memorable masterpieces and melodies that even the most casual music fans will recognize from movies, commercials, and pop culture. Tickets are cheaper if you buy them in advance, so don't wait. Blumenthal Arts is bringing Tina, the Tina Turner musical, to the Belk Theater for 8 performances. Written by Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Katori Hall, Turner's incredible comeback story is told to the beat of her own iconic songs. It runs June 10th through 15th. Outside of the Charlotte area, the 53rd annual Mount Airy Bluegrass and Old Time Fiddlers Convention is happening June 6th and 7th. It's 2 days of traditional music performances and workshops at Veterans Memorial Park in Mount Airy, North Carolina. And the Carolina Beach Music Festival is set for June 7th and 8th, billed as the biggest and only beach music festival actually held on the beach on the North Carolina coast, featuring beach music bands on Saturday and reggae groups on Sunday at Carolina Beach. Next week, I'll have more sounds, sights, and bites from the mountains to the sea. And remember, you can read Fanfare and find plenty of fun and engaging activities on the WDAV events calendar at WDAV.org. And that'll do it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and remember, you can always hear past episodes at wdav.org/podcasts or on Apple Podcasts. For Piedmont Arts, I'm Phil Vavra.